Okay, we're now in Shmuel Bey's Perek Tesvav, the very bottom page, 296. Vayehi mi'acharei kein. So after all of this, after all of what? So let's go straight to the Mesudas David, the very bottom of the Mesudas David. What does it mean after this? So we just were learning something is there was a disconnect between the father and son of David and Avshalom. But now that they have come back together and the king kissed Avshalom, says the Mesudas David, Achar shemochol lo aviv al avono. He forgave him. So, you would think, once they're now forgiven, so hopefully everything is going to be fine. But unfortunately, that's not what happened. Avshalom used this as an opportunity, now that his father no longer hates him, his father forgives him, so now he can start roaming the streets, acting like a very powerful individual, as we're going to now see. His very gradual and subtle ways about him to try to win over the population. But Yaslo Avshalom, so again, Pasuk Aleph, Vayehi mi'acharei kein, after his father forgave him, that's how the Mesudas David explains it. Vayaslo Avshalom merkava besusim. So what does Avshalom do? Avshalom, he's a prince, granted, but he's not. He doesn't need a secret service and a stretched Cadillac with people, you know, running on all four sides of the car when he's driving. But for some reason, Avshalom gets a merkava. He gets the chariot and susim and many horses.
That's what the king is not allowed to do.
Oh, right. That's right. It's brought down.
He's starting.
I know.
Yeah, if you look in the English, actually, on page 297, we're still in the middle of this pasuk, it says, where it says 1, on the bottom right, on page 296, that Avshalom prepared for himself chariot and horses. That the verse mentions horses implies that Avshalom purchased horses in great numbers. Even Jewish kings avoided having more horses than necessary in accordance with the Torah's commandment. For Avshalom, not a king, to do so was highly irregular. Now, that's what the Ralbag says. On the other hand, the prohibition about having too many horses is only for a king. So he's not a king yet. So that's actually a question.
To tell us that he's going to be a
He shouldn't be king.
He's not the right person. Until now, you feel for him.
Yeah, we're going to see.
That's changing.
We're going to certainly not be feeling for him much longer, at the pressure that he causes his father. So let's just finish this pasuk. V'cha mishim ish rotzim lefanav, and there was 50 men that were running before him. Right. So he had to have his whole. His posse, his whole group protecting him to make sure that everything would be safe. He's such a prominent person, he doesn't want anyone throwing shoes at him or whatever, right? So he has to have all these people watching him. Okay, so let's go back to page 297. I did underline where it says Avshalom's rebellion. It's a pretty powerful paragraph over here, the first sentence. I think at the end, this is a quote of the Abarbanel. On page 297, it says, Avshalom's rebellion. Now, in what is surely one of the saddest episodes in Scripture. That's an unbelievable start of this chapter. That's English. One of the saddest episodes anywhere found in the Torah is what we're going to be reading about. The next four chapters describe Avshalom's attempt to usurp the throne, and according to most commentators, to kill his own father. Which perhaps is the only way that he'd be able to accomplish getting the throne. This is what he was. The rebellion involved killing and sexual immorality, which we'll get to, which were mita keneged mita, measure for measure, response for David's conduct with Uri and Bathsheba. It was the final segment of David's punishment for that sin. So therefore, bear that in mind as we see poor David, who's being pressured and all the terrible things that are going to happen to him. On the other hand, he kind of had it coming, if I can say it that way, to speak about David in such a fashion. And in fact, as we're now going to see the next pasuk, there's a very interesting Gemara in Megillah that tells us that there are, when the Torah is read, there is also, in fact, some shuls do this currently, to this day. For example, in Yemenite, Temonim, they after each sentence is read on Shabbos, they read the Targum, or the translation of that sentence. It's the most very fascinating thing to watch. They have someone read a pasuk in the Torah, and then they have like a kid, or whoever, that's when I once saw it in Israel 14 years ago, saying the Targum, the translation in a... It's not English translation, but the Targum, in which people would understand it better. So that's how it was done throughout the entire Torah. The Gemara actually says, "Masa of Shalom Nikra Umetargim." This is not in our packet, but the Gemara goes through certain stories that we just don't want translated. There's certain things that better, if you understand it, then that means you're probably smart enough to understand the depth of it. If you don't understand it, we don't want to translate it. And perhaps one of the more famous examples is Shir HaShir, right? Which you're hard-pressed to find a literal translation because of its meaning and what it really means. So the Talmud tells us that this story, it says, you know what, you're allowed to translate it. And the Gemara says, Pshita. Of course, why not? Why wouldn't you be able to translate it? And the Talmud says, Mahu Tema Lechashli Kar De David. Kamashvon, that's the whole Gemara. It says, perhaps we'd be concerned about the honor of David. To have to read, as we're going to read and translate and understand better, we're going to see that it's a very, very disheartening, that which occurs to David, that his own child rebels against him, wishes to overthrow him, kill him, he's going to be running away, similar to what he had to do before he was a king. When Shaul was chasing after him, he has this happen to him all over again later in his life. So, the Mishpat Zahav interprets and asks the question, does that mean we don't care about David's honor? What does that mean? Why will we allow it to be translated? And there are different ways to understand how to address that question as to why we want this story to be taught, that everyone should know this story. Doesn't mean that we don't want to show honor to David. David HaMelech, we must show constant respect for. But there are underlining messages in this story that we must be aware of. And one of them, which he brings down, is the power of sheker, of lies. That of Shalom, who completely falsifies and acts like he is such a great person, that he's a man of the people, as we're going to see, which he only had his own agenda. How important it is for us to internalize that message so that if it comes to a time that we experience someone similar in our lifetime, such people, that we shouldn't gravitate towards such leaders. That we should have open eyes and not look blindly and just to think what they say, take it for face value. And on Shalom, unfortunately, it took for face value. And therefore, because of that, he is going to end up having masses of people following him to the point that David has no choice but to run away and hide. But that's how the Mishpat Zahav explains. It's not that we don't want to honor David, but at the same time, it's an important message for ourselves. That when we hear a leader that starts saying a bunch of lies, and if you say a bunch of lies enough time, all of a sudden...
People believe it.
Exactly. So, right.
Here you have a pretty concord.
Right. Absolutely. This is
another message here. The father is also responsible for the way he turns out. You do bad.
Right. That's right. That's right. That's right. So, as we go through the story, and we're going to see how, we already saw in the first pasuk, how Avshalom is similar to a person who spends millions of dollars to try to become the next president of the United States. He is just trying to impress the masses and give promises, which we're going to see are impossible for him to keep, but people don't care. Because the key word, as we're going to see, Avshalom keeps pushing over and over, is change.
Oh.
You're going to see that. Right. You'll see that the old ways of David, the old ways of this old guy David, the way that he runs things, I'll be able to do things differently. And that will be something which we'll see in the Psuki. So let's continue with Pasuk Bet. And this is what we're going to see now. What were some of the tactics? Again, he didn't go right away and rebel. Because if you rebel from zero to rebellion, no one's going to listen. You have to gradually win the hearts, slowly, slowly, of the masses. So how did he accomplish this? Pasuk Beis tells us exactly how he did this. Pasuk Beis, top of page 28. V'hishkim Avshalom. Avshalom woke up early in the morning. Who cares? And Rashi tells us, not only v'hishkim Avshalom, it wasn't because he couldn't sleep one night. Rashi says, b'chol boker, every single morning, he got up early. So you can ask, who cares? The point is that when it comes to a person who has to figure out where his next meal is coming from, of course, v'hishkim b'boker, I got to get into the field at sunrise, so hopefully I'll be able to have enough food for myself and to be able to survive. If you happen to be related to a king, which makes you a prince, you're probably not thinking, how am I going to get dinner? Because dinner is going to be there for you. You don't have to lift a finger. And therefore, because of that, the Talmud actually tells us that it was the ways of kings to wake up in the third hour of the morning, which we can translate as 9 o'clock in the morning, assuming sunrise is 6 o'clock, you know, in that range, which is unheard of. But a king doesn't have to get up any earlier. Why should I have to get up before 9 o'clock? Well, get up a little bit later. And that's what the prince would do. He would also get up late. And in fact, that's the reason why, this is a sidebar, the Kriyat Shema, when it comes to reciting the morning time Shema, it needs to be done by the third hour. And the Talmud says, because the kings would wake up in the third hour and they would start worshiping their gods, lowercase g, their idols. And how could we acknowledge God, Hashem, after they did? And therefore, that's the reason why our deadline is the third hour in the day. And of course, it varies depending on when sunrise and sunset is, but roughly 9 in the morning, depends. But that's the reason the Talmud gives as to why, is because the kings would wake up in the third hour. So why am I saying this? So the Mishpat Zohar explains that Avshalom did not want to give the impression that I am a typical prince, that I'm a guy that wakes up late, I'm a guy that has my meals ready, and that I am not one of you. Instead, he's out in the trenches, he's out in the fields, he gets up early in the morning with everyone else. He's campaigning. He is a man of the people. He's a simple person, right? And that's, who was that in the campaign, how he kept talking about how my father, he was a poor guy in the factory, and of course, was that Edwards? Was that
Edward,
Ivan, Edwards. Yeah, but that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to exactly. That was their whole. That's the motivation of Avshalom over here of Hishkim Baboker. So I get up early. I'm one of you. So he sits in the coffee shop with them at 6 in the morning, and he's schmoozing them up. V'omad al yad derech hashar. So there he is standing alongside this gate. He doesn't have a nice fancy chair. He's standing. V'ayhi kol ish asher yeh lo riv. Anyone who has a riv, the Masudah Sion translates the mishpat. So it's usually a quarrel. A riv means that there's a dispute between two people, and therefore mishpat, you have to go to a court to be able to reconcile. Lavo al mel. So what would they do? They go to the king. L'mishpat. So this old-fashioned king by the name of David was the one that they would be waiting for to be judged. Now, it's very possible that David wouldn't be the one that would judge. Maybe he had one of his people below him that would see the case. Because after all, I can't see every single case. It's impossible. V'yikra Avshalom elav. So Avshalom called out to these people, V'yomer, and he asked, Eimi ze'ir ata. He would small talk. Where are you from? Which city are you from? He doesn't even know who these people are. He doesn't care. He's just trying to show that he does care. But Yomer, and they responded, Mi'achad Shifni Yisrael Avdecha. We come from one of these such and such tribe of Israel. You're going to say something.
I was going to say that what he's saying is correct, because David did not judge, and he's the best example of the fact that David did not judge. If David would have judged, Avshalom would not be where he was then.
That's a good point.
Right. That may be what...
He's not lying.
That may be the...
David
why,
is not acting.
Right.
He was not acting anymore. He was...
He was getting
old. He was deeper.
Yael. Correct. And that may be the reason why he specifically chose this particular weakness that he zeroed in, because people may have been sensitive to that.
He's pointing out the fact that David was not a very good judge. Right. He didn't judge his own.
Right.
Right.
So that's what we're going to see. His focus is going to be not on my positive qualities, but as we find in all these campaigns, these commercials that just bash the other one. So if I can make you hate the other one, and you can only vote for two people, I guess you'll vote for me.
And you know my story.
What's that?
And you know my
story. Oh, right. Story. Exactly, right. So you can relate to Avshalom. You can feel bad for him.
It's subliminally. You know, it's like a subliminal
message. I can say.
But he did it in a way people care about their own issues. So instead of him crying about his problems, he showed that this is your problem and we're the same, and they can relate to that. And maybe that's the reason why they'll think he'd be a more effective judge, an effective king, because he knew what it was like on the other side, right? He experienced it. So if we look at the Masudas David on Pasuk Beis, he asked, Amizeh, hu mederech chiba? He was asking this
out of love.
Lishol es adam mikomo v'inyano. He didn't just ask him where they came from, but he was trying to get to know the people on a real personal level.
He's a real politician.
Absolutely. And their response was, Mi'echad shifte. Kol echad hoyim meishiv kfi hashevet shahoyim mimenu. When he asked what city you're from, it's interesting, they didn't tell him what city. They didn't answer his question. They said, what tribe?
Yehuda.
We're going to see. Yeah, we'll get to Sheva Yehuda in a second. The next pasuk, I'm going to point that out. Of a low ha'ir. Mesudas David points out, for some reason, they didn't mention the city. And for a practical reason, ki lo ha'yu kol ari Yisrael nikarim l'Avshalom. How is Avshalom going to know every little town, every village? So they just gave him a perspective of the general vicinity of where they lived. You can say, oh, I live in this little town in Waterford, Connecticut. It's like, oh, tell me Connecticut. Okay, all right, Connecticut, good enough. All right. And so that's what they did. So that's how the Masudas David answered. Right. So that was the conversations that he had. Now, we're going to see the specific reason why they responded the Shevet that they were from, which is how the Me'am, we're going to see, how, I'm going to talk about the Me'am Lois in a second, which first let's see the next pasuk. V'yomer Avshalom. So Avshalom said, Mi yisimeni shofet ha'aretz. So, who, as he says, is it possible that there be someone that could appoint me, yisimeni, that I should be appointed as the judge over this land? I wish that I would be able to judge this guy. I'm sorry, I skipped on. V'yomer Elav Avshalom, or in Pasuk Gimel. V'yomer Elav Avshalom, Re'ei Devarecha Tovim V'Nechochim. So in Pasuk Gimel, Avshalom said, you know, that which you said, your claim in your case, is very good. I can really relate to your case. And you know, I think you should win. V'shoymeya Ein Lucham Eis HaMelech. However, no one is going to be able to listen to you, because this is just how the king is. He's not going to listen as intently as I listened. He's not going to listen to all the facts. You need to listen to all the facts. And if you listen to all the facts like I do, then you would have won. But unfortunately, he's not going to do that. So, if we look at the Masudas David first, the Masudas David Pasuk Gimel says, and I underline only part of it, I can see that what you're saying is good. But the judgment will be in your favor. You don't have a good lawyer. You don't have the dream team, right? You need a Dershowitz on your side. There's no one that's going to be able to speak on your behalf, and the king's not going to listen to you. You're a nobody. Ratzalomar lehaven hadavar, to really understand what you're saying. So you need someone to advocate for you, and you don't have it. And the Me'amlois says it a little bit differently. Me'amlois says that what Avshalom is doing is giving David a dig in the following way. When he mentioned about what tribe are you from, why did he mention specifically where you're from? Because he was basically saying the following. Are you from the tribe of Yehuda? Because if you're not, you're in big trouble. Because the king, by the way, he comes from the tribe of Yehuda. And if you're from the tribe of Yehuda, then you're good shape. He'll favor you. You'll win. He doesn't care even if you have a lousy case. You're wrong. Oh, you're from my family? You win. So, oh, you're not from that particular place? Unfortunately, you're going to be in big trouble. And that's how the man always says that's what it means when the pasuk that says, V'shomei ein lecha me'eis ha'melech. He's not going to listen to anything that you have to say because you're not from his tribe. Me, on the other hand, I listen to the facts. He doesn't care about the facts. He only cares about his tribe. And if you're not from that tribe, you're in big trouble.
And that's why he didn't ask what tribe you're from. He just asked what city. He wasn't really interested in what tribe. He's saying, I'm not interested in what tribe you're from because
he's Yehuda, Yehuda, my book comes from Yehuda. He's saying, I'm a candidate. I hear him say, I'm a candidate. I'm Yehuda.
Okay. He's an American. He was born in the United States.
Right. I'm eligible. I'm eligible.
You don't have a judge. You don't have a. He's not judging. He's not doing what he's supposed to do. But I, on the other hand,
right.
I love you.
Right.
And I'm your dad.
Right. So it's. I like this. This other idea is that they mentioned which shevet they were from, but his focus wasn't on. Oh, I only want to speak to the states that you know where I can get as many electoral votes. I want to speak to I want to go to the little towns.
I want to go to Rhode Island.
Yeah, I want to go to the little cities. I want to look at the simple person. I'll talk to Joe the plumber, right? Wow. So that's what my intentions are, and that's what he tried to do. Now, the next pasuk. Okay, now we're in pasuk Dalad. Vayomer Avshalom. So Avshalom speaks. It says, "Miyisimeni shoyfet ba'aretz." I wish can there be someone that would have enough brains to get rid of this ridiculous person currently in office, and finally give someone the opportunity to be able to really affect change around here, and that people who are down and out, people that are being mistreated, the economy is lousy. Why can't you appoint me as the judge over this land? Va'olai yavo kol ish. Kol ish, every single person will come. Ashiya lo reed, that'll be a issue. Mishpat vehistaktiv, and they will become. How is it translated here? You'll be judged fairly, but it also could mean that you will be victorious. And the question that some of the commentators ask:
How
could everyone win? And the answer is that. The pasuk tells us that he went to every person individually. So, even though the two of you are in a court case, I speak to you quietly, privately, and say, you know what? If I was the judge, you would win. And then after you walk out the door, I say, well, by the way, if I was the judge, you would win.
This is how the politicians learn. So they learn straight from the show.
Right.
Well,
see.
One day in a sense that his beauty helped him.
Charismatic.
He was charismatic and this
right.
When the king was old,
I guess
he probably
didn't
show himself as much to the public.
Right. That's what some people say about the two candidates, that one of them was more attractive, held himself better,
spoke
nicely. Right. He knew how to speak to the people. He focused. So this is what he did. So But as we just saw in November, we also see now, and in Avshalom was equally as successful winning the minds and the hearts of the people. Pasuk Hey, let's see Pasuk Hey and Vav, then we'll stop. Ahoya, Bikrav Ish Lehish Tachavos Lo, so that whenever he went to someone, so what did he do? Did they bow down to him? No, right? They wanted to bow down to him. But Sholach Ez Yado, he stretched out hand, the Hechsek Lo V'Noshak Lo, and he would stretch out his hand and take hold of him and kiss him. Which is very interesting, going back to the last pasuk in the previous parak, that's what David did to Avshalom. But this is what Avshalom is doing, saying, get off the floor, you don't have to bow down to me. You bow down to someone who thinks that they're better than you. That's David's way of thinking. I'm one of you. We get up at the same time, we talk, I care about you. You don't have to lie down. In fact, I'm going to kiss you, because without you, the simple American, then who am I? Right? So I respect you. You don't have to bow down to me. You can imagine, you're building up that person's self-worth and self-esteem. Oh, this is the person I want in office. This is the person who I want as the next king.
He's campaigning for the king now.
That's what he's doing, right? Very effectively. Bahaya Babayasav Shalom Kadavar Hazeh. So Avshalom didn't just do this once or twice to a couple people. He did this L'chol Yisrael. He did this to everyone. This is the way that he went around. He went on that bus, he took his jets and went from every single town. It took him a year to campaign, or how long it took. It just took a long time, we're gonna see. Asher Yavol Mishpat El Hamelach. And his focus was always to be able to take over the throne. Vayiganev Avshalom es lev anshi Yisrael. Very interesting lashon, that he stole the hearts, from David. And Avshalom was able to, once you can control the emotions of the people, and then ultimately he's got it made, to the point, as we're going to see next week, that David is going to be informed right after numerous years, we're going to see how long, that he's told, guess what, wake up. Almost like he didn't realize what was going on. It's hard to understand. You know, you're in big trouble, because you're going to be, there's a rebellion going on in your midst, and you better either stop the rebellion somehow with your army, or you better run and hide. And he chooses the latter.